West Nkosi, the noted penny whistle virtuoso from South Africa, with Mazuzu, meaning young woman. This is from his album Rhythm of Healing. Nkosi's compositions and styles of music were the driving force behind the distinctive sounds of Ladysmith Black Mambazo, Mahalatini and the Mahotela Queens, and scores of other South African groups, producing for them thousands of recordings. He was paralyzed in an auto accident in August of 1998 and died 2 months later. He was 58 years old. But imagine that, making his name with a penny whistle. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. This is where you decide where the conversation ought to go. And hopefully you have a point, because we're going to be listening for it. Maat from New York, you get us started today.
Greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you.
I've been listening to the commentary and the callers, even when sometimes I'm not calling in. And your commentary, and of course many of the callers make such excellent points, and your particular commentary around community, which is something that's a real issue with Black folks. So that conversation needs to continue. And I just want to, I guess one point that I want to make is that what's going on in this country is a bit of a head shaker in some respects. And I'm not just talking about the fool in the White House, but when you consider that anywhere from 30 to 40% of the people, you know, actually support this guy, it's like a head shaker beyond description, because he's a pathological liar, he's a child, he's incompetent. I mean, just think about what he did, I think it was yesterday, where after he managed to dodge the bullet with Mueller, and, you know, Mueller didn't turn out to be our Elliot Ness, as it were, and he said that he had to bend over backwards because the defendant couldn't defend himself, but 140-plus contacts with the Russians, et cetera, et cetera. He virtually admitted his knowing about the meeting in the tower and everything else that we know about in this document and in the report, with his comments yesterday to the effect where if he's offered dirt on an opponent from a foreign actor, that he's just full speed ahead and his FBI director is wrong. I mean, he doesn't even know when he has a disagreement. He's so stupid. He doesn't even know what not to say just to cover his own backside. You know, now he's trying to pull it back because there's been so much blowback, even from his sycophantic Republicans. So we're in a jam over here. No question.
But so what's new?
What's new? Well, just moving forward with what you're always talking about, just figuring out how to build community and get out the truth, because the truth about anything is it doesn't seem to be important to too many people right now. You know, and now, of course, we're seeing the situation with Iran, where the Pompeo, Secretary of State, is coming back and accusing them. And it's obvious that, Pompeo, Bolton, Mohammed bin Salman, and the other Ben guy from the United Arab Republic, have a trajectory. And Trump is so, it's just so without mooring, without bearing, that they could easily take this country to war, and it could very well be World War III, if you can believe that.
Well, it's a dangerous situation we're in, but we've now been in it for 2 years, and it looks like Trump is going to go right through his four-year term. He's not going to be stopped. And the question is, are we ready for such an eventuality? Are we ready for that to happen? Because it means immediately an attack on us. So far, we've received several of those already from the Trump administration. Are we ready for what's coming? And that's my question. We have to get ready for what's coming because it's almost here. In many ways, we've experienced some parts of it, but we haven't seen the full Monty yet. It's coming. And we have to be ready. And in the meantime, what we can do is reconfigure our own thinking. This whole thing that's going on is really their fight. They're squabbling and they're fighting and they're brutal with each other and also with others, but they're squabbling for power and wealth. Nothing is stopping that. But they would like us to believe that somehow we're included in this fight. They're fighting for us. No such thing. So our question, therefore, to ourselves is, if nobody is fighting for us, does that not mean we have to fight for ourselves? And if so, how does that fight, what does that fight look like? And when do we start it? We have to fight for ourselves. They're not paying any mind to our concerns and our benefits and the idea that we live in, supposedly in a democratic society and everybody has a say in where things are going. No such thing. A small group of people are running this war. And we should disabuse ourselves of the notion that they're really running for us. They're very concerned about what is happening. No, they're concerned about their pensions. They're concerned about what kind of money they could make, how to set themselves up for a political afterlife, and how to see to the financial rewards, not just for them, but for their families and so forth. That's their focus. That's their priority. We are not.
Well, Yatrice, if I could just respond to that in one last point, is that a perfect example of this, and I heard a gentleman call into, I heard a clip of the Tom Hartman show, and he made an excellent point, the same thing I've been thinking about, is that all we hear about around impeachment is Mueller, Mueller, Mueller. I mean, this president from the very beginning, I mean, you set a standard. What's the point in having the tool of putting the stain? You know, this guy, Trump can't even say the impeachment word. He can say all kinds of vulgar words, but he can't even say it. And so they spin it and say, oh, well, that's what he wants. That's not what he wants. The lying, the unfitness for office, the fact that he's a malignant narcissist, he's misguided, he has no core beliefs. I mean, you know, the bigotry that Al Green made into an article of impeachment where he's put children in cages, and that situation is becoming more disastrous. Some of the children are now in a former Japanese internment camp. And we don't hear any talk about his very danger, especially since we see this Iranian situation playing. I mean, this guy Trump, he was on a podium around the time he was in Europe or thereabouts, and he stood up there and he said, we don't want them, his main point around Iran was, we don't want them to have nuclear weapons. Well, that problem was much already solved with five other countries. So it just gets worse and worse.
It gets worse and worse, and it gets closer and closer. This is a problem I'm having. It's getting closer and closer. Thanks, Mahat, for getting us started today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Harvey, you're on the air from Berkeley.
Hello, more than wonderful, Eutrice.
Hello, more than wonderful, Harvey. What's going on?
Well, again, to continue along the subject, you've been speaking about the power of community, and I'd like to share some thoughts with you and your vast audience about taking your idea to the next level. And I'd like to see us, the human race, make an important step up to a higher consciousness, a new way of seeing ourselves as a community of people on this fragile planet, our fantastic spaceship we call Mother Earth. And at this time in our evolution, in the evolution of our species, I see patriotism as a kind of a poison that's killing us and putting many of our of Mother Nature's creatures in harm's way. It's been reported that Earth is losing both terrestrial and aquatic wildlife at 1,000 times faster than the natural rate. And we're kept at each other's throats to distract us from the real problems, like the boiling of our planet by the fossil fuel industry. And because of this nonstop nationalistic conditioning, we and our good ship Mother Earth are like the Titanic, starting to slip under the waves of our ocean rise due to the melting of the planet's polar caps. And around the world, politicians sell us patriotism like it's a product. Our own President Trump and his corrupt Republican administration are busy using our precious tax dollars to build a wall across the American-Mexican border. There are now over 77 major border walls built around the world today and more underway. But the good news is that we live in a time of instant communication. The worldwide internet and cell phones have put us all in contact with each other on a global scale. Even though we, the people, are conditioned to see ourselves as citizens of Earth's 195 different countries, our world's largest corporations are way ahead of us, and they call themselves multinational corporations, and their trick is to wrap themselves in the local flags and sell us their products, including war. So it's time to grow up and put our childish patriotic flag-waving conditioning aside and start to see ourselves as a global community. I now think of myself as an earthling, and I hope that you'll join me in my effort to create a better world for us, our children, and future generations.
Well said, Harvey. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for that. That's an energizer.
All right. Love you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Thank you. You too. There are two numbers I want to remind you that you can call in on. Of course, our regular 888-874-4888 and a new number, 646-922-8391. 646-922-8391 and 888-874-4888. Speaking to Harvey's point, it is important for us to establish for ourselves this notion of community. And I talked about that at some length because it's our only defense. It's our only sure defense. Because now we see the acts against us aren't just against us. You know, they've globalized it. They've globalized these attacks, these cruel, wanton things that they're doing, these various governments and people in government who, again, are fighting for just, they're not fighting for the future of all people. They're fighting for themselves. Money, power, influence, control, that's what they're fighting for. George from California, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
There
is something. Oh, hello. There is something that has been bothering me for a long time, and I can't get past it. I hear a lot of people complaining about Trump, but I hardly ever hear anyone talking about or even upset about, I can't think of the word I want more than upset, the fact that he lost the vote by over 3 million. And he's in the White House. I'm not saying that I like Hillary. Actually, she beat Bernie because of something similar. But anyway, I don't hear anyone talking about that. The Electoral College. I don't hear anyone, I can't think of the word I want, outraged by that institution. I mean, the fact that Trump lost by over three, I think it's closer to 4 million votes. And everyone's talking about what candidate they want, who they're going to vote for, and it's like they missed the point. And I want to ask you, can you explain this to me?
I'm totally with you. I want it explained too. And certainly, I was expecting to hear from those running that they had a slight problem with this. That I think, I forgot who it was, but the issue was raised, but not by a central political figure, by a kind of off-to-the-side political person, about getting rid of the Electoral College. But that's as far as the subject went.
I called Tom Hartman.
Traction.
What'd you say?
It didn't get much traction.
Oh. I called Tom Hartman's show. And it was the day when he had Senator, I can't remember who it was. Anyways, I was talking about this. And he's not a senator, he's from the House. He said that they talked about that in the beginning of this term, and they talked about doing something about the Electoral College, getting rid of it or something. But I had the feeling that, I mean, he didn't sound that strong about it. And I really doubt that this next election in 2020 is going to be rid of the Electoral College. I mean, my feeling about this started when Gore lost after having most of the votes. It was the Electoral College that got Bush in the White House. And it's happening again. And what's to say that this is not the way things are going to be? I bet that Biden's going to win because of the Electoral College.
Ah, you're hitting on a very interesting point. And
I don't
the point
anything
is that
Biden.
Both sides, both parties, find great merit in the Electoral College because it provides so much elastic so as to change the political will of the people. Now, it seems to me, I mean, just talking about voting, the person who gets the most votes wins, right? But that's not the way for the Electoral College. And there's so much wiggle room that both sides see, and I say both sides, even some minor parties, but for the most part, it's the two major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, they see so many loopholes that could be of benefit to them if they should end up in a place where they can get technical and cite this clause and cite that clause in order to come through. And we've seen that it worked.
Tell me something. Are you saying that they see they have this this institution because it gives them control over the vote? If they don't like who the people voted for, they have this to change the direction of everything?
Well, what I'm saying is that the electoral process, our understanding, your and my understanding of it, is that It should be free and fair. But, of course, we're talking now in the world of politics, where nothing is fair. Everything is open to negotiation. Everything has a lot of loopholes in it, a lot of interesting clauses that somehow show up if the result for either party is not to their liking, then they go legal. And people can't say, well, it's illegal because it's there on the books. We haven't had an insistence, a popular insistence, that the vote should be a very simple matter. We don't need all these clauses and these extra organizations bearing on the outcome of the vote. It's a very simple thing, it seems to me. You're holding an election, fine. You have a process already accounting for who gets the most votes. Why can't we leave it at that? But this is the way politics works in the United States. They make you believe that, yep, we're for the plain, simple method. The person with the most votes wins. However, if we don't like the result, we can resort to other legal means to undermine what we consider to be the normal procedure.
Can I ask you something? I wanted to ask you something. Can you explain why no one's talking about this? No one is outraged by...
Just as I said, no one... I'm going to say no one. I think we mean it to we understand it to mean parties as such. They're not discussing this because this is a very...
No, I mean the people. I mean the American people.
The American people don't know about these things.
About the electoral, they don't know that Trump lost by 3 or 4 million votes?
Well, even if they do, the point is that it is made to seem, this is what I'm saying, it is made to seem not at all abnormal or illegal.
Yeah.
Because neither side brought up the issue as an issue.
Right. It was interesting to see what Gore's reaction was when he lost, the way he gave in. It really dumbfounded. I mean, I was just dumbfounded by his reaction. I thought he would protest. You would think people would protest, but what you're saying makes sense. That's why they don't.
No, they don't, because for Gore, in so many other ways, the party would give him rewards for just laying low on the issue. Don't make a big fuss about it, because the next go around we could ensure a win, you know, by the Democrats, and the Republicans say, well, the next time we have you too. It is both in both their interests not to pursue the matter, because it gives them a lot of wiggle room. And there will be a lot of negotiation that we don't see behind closed doors as to how to figure out their way out of this morass. This is not legal, not to the people's understanding. This is not supposed to happen. The vote should be the vote. But both sides, again, have gone behind the people's backs, if you will, and gone behind what we understood to be the law, and created a whole other apparatus that, should they find a need to use it, they can trigger it. And there won't be an uproar about it, because they could always say, we went about this the right way.
I wonder what other countries think about all this. Do they think that the American people voted Trump in, or are they wise to what's really going on?
I don't know, but I figure that most people rely on popular acceptance of a thing and then accept it as, well, that's the way it works in the United States. There was no popular uprising about this to indicate to the rest of the world that a sizable portion of the voting population disagrees with the outcome. And that they were pressing for investigations or filing lawsuits or whatever it is to indicate that a sizable portion of the voting population believed the outcome to be illegal. That did not happen. So to the rest of the world, the quirkiness of the United States voting process just, you know, proceeded. And it chose Trump as the winner.
Do you know the beginnings of the Electoral College was, what, in the 1800s, 1700s? When, I guess it was probably after 1865, when blacks were given more freedom, and they wanted to make sure that they couldn't have any weight in voting for a certain candidate. So they developed this to be able to control the situation, no matter how many people voted for anyone. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, but I would disagree about the blacks being given more freedom part. Blacks never were considered to be given more freedom, especially in the outcome of a vote for president.
Blacks, maybe it was landowners versus non-landowners, huh?
Well, it's not just landowners, it's also race, because the country is steeped in racial politics and apartheid. That's what it was. And so they had to present some kind of a reasonable face to the public and to the rest of the world. So they come up with all kinds of ways to divert attention away from what the central issue is. And these are palliatives that they come up with, which they make carry legal weight. There's no legal justification for what they did with this Electoral College. They just made it happen. This is not part of the law. They just made it happen. And both sides agreed, because they wanted to have a fail-safe.
Yeah.
A kind of, you know, in case we need some kind of rationale that the people will buy, or the people will have to buy, because it would be sold as a legal and constitutional issue, we have to do something. It's good for both of us.
Well, so you mentioned before, excuse me, you mentioned before that we have to reconfigure our own thinking. And for me, this hits the nail on the head. And for me, I don't see any purpose in voting unless it's for a certain bill or something. But voting for a president, I don't know what other offices there are that is the Electoral College only directed toward the presidency of the United States and nothing else, not governors, senators, House of Representatives? Do you know that?
To my knowledge, it pertains specifically to the race for president.
Oh, okay. Well, I have to say I have no reason to vote. You know, Obama was the first president I ever voted for. After he had his 4 years and I heard the truth about what he did, I didn't bother voting for him again.
Well, I didn't vote for him in the first place.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I did not.
Everyone knows about how you don't vote.
I was looking at how he expressed his electoral attitude long before he ran for the presidency.
Oh.
The company he kept, the way he sided with the wrong side. Particularly his attitude toward Africa and the Caribbean that concerned me a great deal. And it was clear to me that he was run by somebody. He was not his own man.
Now, was this while he was in, was he a senator?
Yes, he was a state senator.
So did you hear all of this about him, by him speaking in the Senate, or maybe before in Chicago, where he had other...
You talk to people who ought to know. You talk to people who had particular concerns. And you check and you see, yeah, well, he did do this. And he did it in defiance of what a lot of people wanted him to do. Or he did nothing. Or he did embarrassing stuff. And one of the embarrassing things was the way he conducted himself with respect to Africa. You do not go, especially as an African-American official, and start wagging your finger of blame when this was your first foray. How about just saying hello? Start there and let us hear about your concerns. Let us hear about what you come to Africa, your thoughts, what you aim to deliver, something uplifting.
But yeah,
mostly it was to point fingers, call them crooked and corrupt and so forth. Well, as it turns out, we can see that they're no more crooked or corrupt than the American government.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't appreciate that at all. And even while he was in office, there were only token gestures toward the developing world.
Right.
I didn't appreciate that either.
The funny thing is that he won the Nobel Peace Prize, and after that escalated his killing. His killing spree.
Well, the Nobel Peace Prize, you can't blame them. This was a first in a sense, and they wanted to capitalize on the Obama machine and the trail it had begun to blaze. So, okay. But when you look at the definitive evidence of things that the Obama administration did, and Obama himself, positions that he took, I did not find them compatible with my way of thinking.
But
we have to move along, George, because we have people hanging on.
Okay,
I want to thank
a
you
short
so much.
Thing I want to say.
Me. I'm sorry.
Can I just say one short thing? I had heard that he got the Nobel Peace Prize because they were trying to influence him to back off from all the killing that he had started to do.
We don't know.
Yeah, I heard that. I forgot. It was a long time ago. Well, thank you very much, Yatrice, and thank you for your show.
Thank you, George, for calling in and contributing so meaningfully today. Jean from Maryland.
Hey,
I hope it's Jean. I hope it's not Jean.
No, it is not. It is Jean. And
it is Jean. Okay, thank you.
So I don't want to talk about Donald Trump. I'm great, thank you. And how about yourself?
I'm hanging in.
All right. So I don't want to talk about Donald Trump.
Good for you.
I want to point out that for 100 years or more, the U.S. and global press and U.S. and European leaders have talked about the levels of corruption and whatnot in Africa and how Africa was such a basket case. And I would like to point to a comparison. Today, the New York Times published an article which was talking about the prosecutor in Flint, Michigan, who has dropped all charges against elected officials for poisoning the citizens of Flint, Michigan with their water. I am outraged.
Why are you outraged?
So, the level of corruption that would have to have taken hold and is so brazenly foisted upon people is just at a level where you would think that there is absolutely no way that these elected officials, who were shown to have been redirecting funding, who were shown to have been engaged in cronyism, who were shown to have violated their oaths of office. How could these people possibly get away with this and walk away with poisoning a city of several hundred thousand people? Deaths, Legionnaires' disease, lead poisoning of children. There were manslaughter charges on the table. How could they walk away from this? I don't understand. And if we can find a way to bring some level of justice for these people, and maybe I just need to get accustomed and used to the fact that there is no justice. Maybe I need to make an adjustment to my thinking to accept that. But this is just outrageous.
I agree with you. It is outrageous that this judge dismissed the charges that included manslaughter against these so-called responsible leaders. But that's one issue. There is a deeper issue here, Gene. What do you think it is?
I think there's a number of them, but the one that comes to me the clearest is the fact that we live in a lawless land. We do not have a set of standards which apply across the board. We do not have a set of rules which apply a range of governance. There's a set of things which apply to some people, and then there are some people that it just doesn't matter.
And well, it's still a racist society. We know that. And in that sense, the judge's decision to expunge all of these officials of blame for what has happened in Flint and what is continuing, we ought to remember that, it didn't go away. It is continuing. But what it speaks directly to, and I was hoping you would point it out, is that there is no real confrontation, open confrontation by the people. They have not, maybe, and I understand, I don't want to make it sound like I'm blaming the people. I'm saying these are the facts. The people and the representation that they have so far, or so-called, have not stood up the way they ought to and fight this problem. They left it all in the hands of what they know and what they knew to be a corrupt system. Why am I not shocked at the outcome? We had just a few people in Flint organizing. We had support But we did not see a political fight in the name of the people. And there should have been such a fight.
Well, maybe. And let me say maybe. Because in Flint, it's very clear, and not just in Flint, but in the greater Michigan, it's very clear that the people have been depowered. You have these unelected city managers, which are put in place by the governor. You have these boards that are there, which are managing the city budget. Again, unelected. In large measure, when you have that kind of control over city agency, funding, and activity, I don't know that the people have a place that they can complain to or at least take a political action against. Who do you vote against when you've got a city manager?
You vote for the people who have been representing you, and there had been such people, probably not as many, but there were many people who stood forward and took on the issue.
With respect, I disagree. We saw in Detroit when the school board attempted to step up and reopen schools that were being closed. And this unelected board, along with the city manager, just came in and swept away the actions and activity of the school board and told them, you're powerless. There's nothing you can do.
Right. And what was their response? They all went home with their tails between their legs.
Well, I think this just
in the face of a blatantly illegal action, when the governor of the state decided that he was going to install managers that he liked, despite there were people who were elected, he overrode all of that. They let the governor run roughshod over the process. Did the Justice Department step in? Did any official federal agency step in to challenge what was going on there on the basis of constitutional rights? When it was clear that so many people were dying of Legionnaires' disease and children were dying of lead poisoning and all other kinds of maladies associated with the tainted water, so corrosive that not even the automobile industry wanted to use it in the production of their cars. Did anybody step in from the Environmental Protection Agency and say, this is a major situation here? No. Did anybody in Congress float a massive investigation calling people to testify? No, because in the end, these were black people, mostly.
This is the comparison that I'm making in the levels of corruption, which are consistently held up and waved in our faces around leadership in Africa. There's no difference. This is the levels of the kind of rotten disregard for the people that these
are. How come you don't hear about these rotten levels of corruption as they apply to any European country? And there's lots to talk about in terms of corruption. The reason they constantly link, Africa, We can't help them anymore because our help has devolved into corruption. Look at what's going on in the United States.
Right, that's my point. I'm not suggesting
in New York City.
I'm not suggesting that what's happening is in Africa is good or bad. I'm simply saying that there is no difference between the levels of corruption that are constantly cited and waved in our faces than what we have right here. No difference. In fact, this is worse.
What we do see, and that it is a bit different, we do see people's reaction. In Haiti, which is going on now, we have a full report coming on Monday. But you see people saying, we're not going to tolerate this. And they're dirt poor. They have everything to lose. And they say, we are not going to tolerate this level of corruption. We're just not going to have it. And if we are prepared to die. You have an entire city, a major city in a state. And people are acting like, well, we'll sit down and talk. The time for talking is done. Action is what's needed. And there's no action. There's no protection, neither from a black administration nor from a white one. There's no protection for the people. Did Obama's administration come into town on their horses and lay down the law and seek out the people doing the wrong and punish them? No.
No. And that's actually a very interesting point, because they did come to town. But what they came to town with was money. And they started doing some remediation to repair some of the piping and re-divert the water and all that kind of stuff as a structural question. But there was no bringing of the law. There was no enforcement of the law. There was no investigation by the EPA to understand who made the orders, who signed the papers. There was no Justice Department to determine the constitutional violations that happened with respect to the liberties of the people. Nothing. Obama simply walked out of office on January 14th and left us with Trump, who simply turned the light off.
Hmm. There you go. So, as you see it, and it seemed to have a pretty good handle on the subject, what is the lesson here? What is it that must be done on the part of the people? Because we can't leave it up to so-called leadership.
That's a scary question, because just as the callers prior to me are pointing out, where you have things like the Electoral College, which takes away the power of the citizen, the value of the citizen. You have, and we have seen a number of examples of groups of people who have attempted to either be independent or set themselves apart in some way. And we saw what happened to the Branch Davidians. We've seen what happened to the MOVE organization in Philadelphia. You know, there's a number of examples of people that have tried that. And the level of pushback, not even pushback. I mean, we're talking about helicopters with machine guns and dropping of bombs on citizens. Make it very, very scary to think in terms of what we're talking about here is exerting our rights. And the ability to do that is being hampered.
Well, you see, part of what has happened is that we have rationalized and we have come to terms with our fears as being so justified that it immobilizes us. If your children, if your families aren't worth a fight, then nothing is.
Well, that's what Dr. King said.
I'm sorry?
I said that's what Dr. King said.
Yeah, well, that's true. If your children who are dying, your grandparents and parents who are poisoned with Legionnaire's disease, if you can actually claim, and it is not an illegal claim, you can lay this directly at the feet of government. They insisted on ignoring the problem because they saw the complexions of the people negatively affected. And so it was their way of saying, hey, you know, this water problem is doing the job for us, cleaning out the people from Flint. And when everybody that we don't want here is dead, then we look about fixing it. If to the people, their community and their families aren't worth getting agitated about, then this is what happens. This is not to be, at some point, it is not a matter about sitting on the different side of a table and negotiating. War has been declared. A war has been declared. A war of attrition. A massive assault on an entire community so as to empty it. And by empty, I mean killing off, knowingly killing off as many people as possible through contaminated water. That makes this a major crime. And if in the face of this major crime, we can't find an agitated response, not just from Flint, but from all over the country, that says we will not permit genocide, which is what this is, but people stay quiet. And so the government that in fact was permitting genocide was able to continue. And here we are, we're discussing this almost academically. We ourselves in this discussion, we haven't linked this to the deaths of thousands, the poisoning of tens of thousands, the writing off by virtue of medical issues of tens of thousands of people's lives, little children, who will never be able to go to school and have a meaningful experience in school and achieve and go on to do good things in life. That's not going to happen because we are afraid. And our leadership tells us we're going to be sitting down and talking with the powers that be, and hopefully we could get a response. We are disillusioned and delusional about the realities that we are confronting, and that's the problem I have with leadership.
Well, I'll leave you with this. The question of the inability and unwillingness of our government, and in this case, the state government, where the rot starts in the governor's chair and goes down from there. To the prosecutor, and I just make one quick correction. You mentioned that it was the judge that dismissed the charges. It wasn't the judge. It's the prosecutor.
The prosecutor, correct. Sorry. And thanks for correcting.
That this individual is rotten to the core and has no morals, no scruples, and is simply inhuman.
But we're looking at it as an individual problem, an individual sin. No. You have to look at it as a systemic problem and therefore affix systemic blame. This prosecutor couldn't have done it unless the system within which she functions approves it. It wouldn't happen. Or the associated prosecutors' organizations say nothing. Well, that means, music means that we have come to the end of our program today. Thank you so much for your very thoughtful contribution. Have yourselves a very loving Father's Day, and we'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.